the most important meal of the day, second breakfast.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to another Second Breakfast podcast. I'm Andy Roth alongside Phil Duvall. Say hi, Phil. Phil?
Hello, everybody!
That's right.
Oh my gosh!
Second Breakfast Nation, we are in the same place.
We are in the same place for the first time in years.
Years? Is it years? I think it's years.
No, it is years. For sure, years. The best part about this whole thing... Well, everybody, if you're listening at home or at the gym on the treadmill, first of all, congratulations. I am really fat today, and you are on a treadmill, so congratulazione. But Andy and I, if you're just listening and can't see us, are in the same room.
I'm actually, like...
touching his face!
Oh my god, we're 7 years old. It's unbelievable.
We have so much more room for activities now.
Oh god, right.
John Stamos...
So a few weeks ago, we talked about how he was going to be in D.C., and I was stopping in D.C. on my way to Princeton, New Jersey for a friend's wedding. And then we just, dates might coincide, and then we just forgot about it.
Well, what was funny about it is when we were talking about it, we were like, we should figure out if we could see Man of Steel together.
Like, that's right.
We didn't even think about the show at all. So then we never thought about it again. So then this morning, I'm in Northern Virginia right now, mm-hmm. as is Andy, as you can tell.
Because it's true.
So this morning, Andy emails our director and me and says something like, can somebody do something? I didn't pay attention to the rest of the email because I blacked out when he said, I've got to get in the car and drive up to D.C. right now. And I was like, So I emailed him back and I was like, you know that I'm in D.C., right? Even though I'm not in D.C., I'm in Northern Virginia and I respect the difference.
Fair enough.
And he was like, I think he texted back, if you could text back a blackout, that's what he did. Like he had a total and utter catwalk frenzy of confusion and amazement.
I had to reboot. Reboot.
And so literally we had no idea even this morning that we were going to be in the same room. And I got to tell you, so he drove up to my school where I used to go, and we're filming at in an old dorm room of a friend of mine that was a Tanzanian, a total troublemaker. He stole my beer once. But anyways, Andy and I, he drove up, and we looked at each other, and it was like we see each other every day on computer.
Right.
But we don't see each other live, and we were like looking at each other like squaring off. Like, is this?
Right. It was like it's a little weird.
It was a little like if a blind date after like we met on the internet and then we were like, well, you're not as cute as you were in the pictures.
Totally. I
thought he was gonna break up with me right there and then.
Yeah. It was like, oh, this is I really liked your intro video. I'm looking forward to getting to know you better. And then like you meet them and it's like
I'm not looking forward to it any longer.
No.
But we're filming now, and it's exciting. We made a decision. See, Andy and I are both revisiting our pasts.
It's true.
I am here revisiting my old seminary with some of my classmates, and it's kind of like a reunion / continuing education thing. Andy is driving up to New Jersey to go to a wedding of an old friend of his, and he, I'm sure, will see many people who will ask him all sorts of questions about his life, and he will have to make up really awesome stories about... things.
Then I went skydiving with Richard Branson. It's crazy.
Then I taught Richard Branson how to skydive. Is what happened.
Nice.
So anyways, we're both revisiting our past, and so we actually thought today would be a really cool day to revisit our past. And what we mean by that, because that's kind of what we do a lot, is talk about our past. Let me be more specific and less abstract. See if you like this.
Mm.
The idea was we wanted to go back and revisit movies we've spoken about before.
Yes.
And see if our opinions of those movies have changed since seeing them again recently. So revisiting a movie that we had an opinion about and going like, how do I really feel about this movie?
Spoiler, these are going to be movies that our opinions have changed because otherwise we'd just be sitting there saying, yep, feel the same about that one. And that does not...
Yeah. For this movie, Phil watched Pulp Fiction, and it is still his favorite movie.
Still great.
And he will continue to talk about it the way he does every single episode.
Yes. For you folks who are just listening and not watching us, another joy that you are missing out on is for the entirety of this podcast, Phil and I are going to be extraordinarily uncomfortable wondering if we should face the camera or each other.
Hi. Well, this is talking. This is how people talk, like this.
We're pretty close. We're pretty close, right? We're
It's a little uncomfortable.
We're about to make out.
I mean, and you're about to make out, and I'm about to give you the hand mush. I'm a married man, people. It's still cheating when it's with Andy, just so you know.
Married, not dead, dude.
Still
okay.
Cheating when it's with Andy. There's no Andy caveat. I guess we're going to face the camera while sitting right next to each other and having a conversation with each other?
Because we're also having a conversation with Second Breakfast Nation.
It's true. Hello, Nation.
Hello, Nation.
I'm Phil Duvall. Oh, you already did that part. Okay.
I hate you. Say hi, Phil.
Hi, Phil.
There we go.
So here's what we're going to do. We're going to start with me or you?
We're going to start with me.
Okay.
No, we're going to start with the Project Melway movie for this week.
That's a great call.
Yeah.
Another reason that we even thought about this, there's a couple things that went into thinking about this. That whole revisiting thing, that was just flourish. Really, what happened was we watched it for this movie for yesterday's episode. We watched our Project Melway episode. We watched The Patriot. And both of us... Now, hold on. I haven't gotten to that part yet. Both of us really liked it when we saw it the first time.
Hmm.
I would even go so far as to say I loved it. No, I didn't love it. But I came out of that being like, America, something, yeah. And I was very excited about life in America. And I was like, that's right. And that's why we declared our independence. And we're amazing. Blah, 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 blah.
And I was like, wow, people died in that I didn't think would die. And the woman is really beautiful. And I'm not sorry I saw that. And that was an enjoyable time at the movies.
That's what happened.
Yeah.
So then we both saw it again recently. And we were just like, ugh! So we didn't like it. And
no.
But we wanted to talk about a couple movies that have sort of changed in our estimation over the years.
Yes.
Since maybe the first time or second time we saw it, saw it.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about one of these, we haven't talked about either of these movies in this way before.
Right.
So we've talked about them before, and since talking about them, seen them and talk about them again sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Shall we start with you?
Yeah. One of Phil's favorite directors and one of my favorite directors that I keep forgetting about, which is unfortunate because I feel like he doesn't get nearly his due, is the Australian director Peter Weir.
Oh man.
And he's done a lot of movies you've heard of. But his most famous, probably in America, is The Truman Show.
Or Dead Poets Society. Those would be the two biggest.
Fair.
Yeah.
Fair. No, that's fair. Fair.
Oh, yeah, we're right next to each other.
Right. Still uncomfortable. don't shake your head at me. I remember seeing The Truman Show and absolutely loving it. And then I was talking about it with a friend of both of ours in college, and he kind of, I don't want to say he ruined it for me, but he gave me this like, what if the movie had been done this way, okay? And
this is why I don't like theater kids from college. This exact reason.
Oh, yeah, it's terrible. But, so, having said that, and his idea was cool to the point of, man, I wish that had been the movie that Peter Weir made. And I know that's presumptuous of me to say that, but I don't care. I'm a consumer of his movie, and I'm allowed to have an opinion. Having said that, don't shake your head.
Go ahead. You're doing fine. Good work, buddy.
I hate you.
Okay.
So, folks, we will never be in the same room again.
This is a god awful mess.
Unmitigated disaster. We realize we hate each other. So, I was of the opinion, even when I was like, "Wow, that movie was amazing and I loved it," I was of the opinion that Jim Carrey's performance wasn't as great as everyone was making it out to be.
Sure.
I thought he did okay, but I thought that only the parts that were the most Jim Carrey-ish at the time were the ones that he really seemed to be really sort of letting loose and just performing the way I knew he could. Like when he's on the beach and the rain follows him he makes the rain follow him as he moves around.
Sure.
And he's like, woohoo! And like that woohoo was, oh, okay, this is not the Jim Carrey that I know, but like this is the evolution of Jim Carrey, the actor, and I'm really enjoying watching what he's doing.
Sure.
And that was the last time I don't think I had seen it since sometime in the middle of college, just a year or two after it came out, right?
Okay.
It came out in 97, 98?
Yep, 97.
Yeah. And I don't think I saw it after the second half of college. And I the way I would speak about it is, oh, it was a good movie. I didn't like it as much as everybody else does, blah, blah, blah.
Who was the guy that ruined it for you?
I'm not going to say his name in the air.
Oh.
Sorry.
Do I know him?
You do. That's why I said a friend of ours. Okay. Friend of ours.
I'm going to call him and break up with him as soon as you tell me who he is.
Fair enough.
Okay, go ahead.
Phil has been talking the movie up to me both on the podcast and off for...
It's just a movie that I adore.
Yeah.
Straight up.
And so last week or the week before, I was like, well, I mean, there's nothing stopping me. I am a free agent. And I control my destiny in this life. And so I'm going to watch The Truman Show because that's clearly the most productive use of my time. And I did. And I have to say... My objections to it haven't completely gone away, but I just don't care. Like in the face of just how glorious that movie is, I wouldn't necessarily call it a perfect movie, and we've discussed what we mean by that.
Sure.
But I love a ton of movies that aren't perfect movies, and this is one of them.
Yeah,
this is one of them.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Yeah, I love it. I mean, it's hard for me because this is one of those movies where I basically was like, you should check it out because I love it, so you need to see it again, and you're wrong about your opinion about it, blah, 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 blah. But there's not much I can do except for be like, I told you.
That's right. Yeah. Well, as long as we're clear on the fact that you are totally the kind of person that would say, I told you so.
But what was the thing that changed it for you? I mean, like, was it just... giving another chance, do you think? Or do you think you're older? Or do you think you noticed something different? Or you had different expectations going in? Or
I don't know.
You're a sheep now and I have trained you? Like, what do you
think
it is?
I don't think it's that.
Oh.
Harold and
no.
Maude. I don't think it's that. But I think that it might be expectations. Because as I say, my objections to it haven't really changed, but I kind of don't care. And we've talked about this in sort of various ways over the past few weeks. You can't be upset with a filmmaker. I mean, you can, but in terms of judging a movie on its own merits, you can't be upset with the movie they made. You can be upset with how they... Like, you can't say, I wish, you know... at the end of Schindler's List, he was actually able to save every Jew in Germany and kill Adolf Hitler.
I mean, we all wish that.
Right? And I'm not saying that because it's a true story. I'm saying it because as a movie, like, that's not the movie that was made, right? And so I can still wish that movie was made.
I can wish that Heat was made with someone besides Al Pacino. These are things that we can wish. So...
Fair.
No, but I'm wondering, so you're saying your critique still stands, but are you saying, like, how is it different then? Do you feel like Jim Carrey's performance wasn't great, or?
I will say this, I would love to see the Jim Carrey from Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind play Truman now. Everything else the same, and I don't know if it's a matter of confidence or experience. I cared less about the problems I had with his performance. I cared less, but they didn't go away completely for me. They just didn't.
Oh.
Thoughts about that?
I just don't know. I mean, it's hard. I'd have to watch it again. I watched it sometime last year, and it is just. I love his performance, but I mean, I think it is a great bridge movie between silly Jim Carrey and serious Jim Kelly. After quarterbacking the Buffalo Bills four consecutive Super Bowls. I think it's a really great performance. I'm not sure I can take it out of its context from when I first saw it because I loved it so much. It's funny, like, you can rewatch a movie as you're older and kind of maybe you can like it more.
Mm-hmm.
It is harder to rewatch a movie when you're older and just admit you don't like it.
Yes.
Or if you have said I love this thing, to love it less. It's difficult. Because it had such a special place for me that the idea of like, oh, this movie isn't what I thought it was. Come on, who wants to admit that?
Right.
I mean, I admitted it with The Patriot, but it's just
but
that movie was so qualitatively less than I thought it was, that there's just nothing to do about that.
Yeah. And I think there's a danger there too, because the movie that is like that, the one that pops into my head the most for or sort of the archetypal answer of that question for me is The Dark Crystal. And I loved that movie as a kid.
Yep.
And when I rewatched it, what I actually thought was, man, I only kind of like it.
Yeah.
I don't love it, but I still love a lot of things about it. So when balanced, I like it.
I think for me it was Neverending Story in a lot of ways. That movie just blew my mind when I was a kid.
Sure.
And then I saw it as an adult. I watched it in school, actually, for a project.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched it and I was like, what? What? Oh, first of all, I was like, wow, these special effects are convincing. Not at all. Secondly, do you know what it's like when you're like, I remember bits of the story, but not the whole story. And then you watch the movie and you go, no, that was the whole story.
No, that was it. That was it. I got it.
I remember the whole thing, and there should have been more for that to make any sense at all.
You know, I guess, but I mean, all I can tell you is for The Dark Crystal, I sense, and I don't think this is just true for movies, but I sense that we're harder on those things than we should be. Like, I don't hate The Dark Crystal.
No.
You know,
but
I actually like it a lot. But
I think what happens to us is that when we were kids, with those two particular movies, both of those movies presented children in danger in real ways.
Yes.
And made us feel both scared,
mm-hmm,
and like we had a chance to make a difference. We weren't, like, the children weren't the helpless people who needed to be saved.
Yes.
And so, I mean, the connection in Neverending Story between Bastion running away and being scared of those kids in real life, and then finding this weird room in his school, which was totally made no sense. That scene, there are no places in schools like that, my friends. That doesn't exist. And then being there and like with the lights going out and all that, like it felt, it, that part is magical and still is to me to this day.
Yeah.
So, but it represented, it made me feel like I was watching a grown-up. Let's see if this makes sense. This might not make sense.
Okay.
It didn't feel like a kid's movie. When I was a kid, it felt like a grown-up movie made for kids. Does that make any sense?
I think so. I think
like
I
in the sense that it didn't feel like it was pandering to children, though it clearly was. When you watch like cartoons, it's very clear you're watching a cartoon. But this felt like a live-action movie that was like treated us like we were the center of this thing.
Yeah,
we weren't watching little puppy dogs dancing across the screen.
Right.
Labyrinth was another one. Like,
right.
I felt scared when I watched that, but not watching Halloween or Friday the 13th scared. It was a scared that I was able to feel. And so then I grow up and I'm like, okay, that movie was important to me as a kid, but
right. Well, I think with Neverending Story in particular, I mean, you don't just have Bastion. Atreyu, it's not an accident that Atreyu is a child warrior. And it's not an accident that when he shows up, everyone's like, wait, seriously, you?
Right.
And then he's like, no, I'm a total badass. You know?
It's true. Look at me. It's true.
Right. It's not an accident. I don't even think it's an accident. Like the childlike empress or whatever her name.
Oh, no.
Is. I mean, that's, you know,
it's all about children.
Yes. And
Gerald McRaney.
And Gerald McRaney. And Major Dad. And with
just wait
Dark
till you
Crystal.
Watch, just wait till you watch Deadwood.
I'm excited.
He's such a...
I'm excited.
He is terrifying on that show.
I believe you. He's also very good on Jericho.
I've heard that thing. Okay.
So with the Dark Crystal, it's the same kind. Obviously, they're not kids. They're technically Gelflings, and I have never been, I don't think, a Gelfling. So I can't really...
Kind of thought you were a Gelfling when I met you, but...
On my father's side, actually. But way back.
Way
back. Like, even before Russia.
Not to betray an old family secret.
Right. No, totally.
My mother was Dutch-Irish.
Father was Gelfling. but again, they are, if nothing else, their physicality. Like, they are smaller than everything in the movie.
Right.
A lot smaller than everything in the movie, except for the truly tiny little things that are the Skeksis' food.
Oof.
Right?
Okay.
And, the, oh, ugh,
okay.
Blah. But like, but yeah. Again, there is that sense. There is that sense of like you are tiny,
yeah.
And there's a big world that you can't control a lot of, and all of these movies are movies that give the child some control, and to bring it sort of back to our topic, you know, the difference between these movies and something like The Goonies, which I think is the same kind of movie. It puts children in real danger, in realistic, if not real, situations. Certainly real within the world of the movie.
Right.
And it, but because it's just a better movie,
yeah.
It holds up.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I hear you. Now, let me ask you something. So,
yeah.
That, everything agreed, clearly. Now, The Truman Show, is there... Were there things that you liked even more this time around specifically?
Yes. Like, yes. Specifically, let me say something I didn't like more this time around, but it's only because it's literally impossible for me to like it anymore, and that is Ed Harris's performance.
Yeah.
My love for that performance didn't increase, but only because I was totally maxed out. I have leveled up to 100. It is...
I think it's
unbelievable.
It is, and I actually feel that performance changed for me when I was growing up. I think when I first saw it, I was fine. I mean, everybody in it was fine.
Yeah.
But as I've grown up and went back and watched that performance, Ed Harris's performance has meant more to me.
That's fair.
I mean, kind of almost always saw him as the villain and just sort of soulless in many ways, or sort of just I don't know... I remember not caring one way or the other if he got nominated, and then he did, and it didn't mean anything to me, even though I loved the movie. And now when I look back on that performance, I'm just like, he fills it with so much. There's so much there with so little. He says so much with so little. And the way that he is just like, his presence predisposes you to understand him. It's almost like the first time you see him, you already know this character. You don't know anything about his personal life at all. You don't know a thing about him.
Right.
And yet you feel like you know him deeply.
I think that's absolutely right. And I think that's the two performances I will mention it's the same sort of process for me, and that's Laura Linney and Noah Emmerich.
Yeah. Yeah.
Laura Linney also, you know, like, oh, she's the villain. She's the one that Truman isn't supposed to be married to. But I mean, but as an adult, I watch that movie and I'm like, what would it do to me to literally be forced to be married to someone for, like, millions of other people's enjoyment, where, like, I have... And then in the middle of an argument, I have to make a product placement for Mococo.
So, well, I mean, I mean, it's still hard, because to me, I think she is completely compromised her soul to be on this.
Agreed. I agree with that.
That character, not Laura Linney.
No, right? I agree with that. Right, Laura Linney, what happened to you? No, I agree with that.
You're a bad person, Laura Linney.
But the response to that, I think the response to that from the movie's perspective is Noah Emmerich's character. Because and this is something that I missed the first time I watched it. It is destroying him, what he is doing.
You think?
To Truman, yes.
Why?
He has these little looks there. It's subtle stuff, but and I don't know. I mean, maybe I don't know.
You're making me want to watch it again to see if that's the case. Because I always felt like his character got worse and worse as he got older, because he was so clearly working side by side with the crew.
I think, and this is just my opinion, and I want you to watch it again because I'd love your take on it. What I think happens is what you're seeing is I'm going to do it, and I'm going to force myself to do it.
Wow.
But,
I have to see that again. I think the other performance that really sort of, I mean, Paul Giamatti's in it, and I didn't know who he was when I first saw it. But it's just that another one of like a Paul Giamatti thing where you're like, here he goes again,
and he's just killing it.
Not the performance, but the role that I think. Okay, when I first saw it, there's the character that he sneaks on and kind of gives him the whole inkling that, I mean, sets the whole thing on fire. And she, her performance, I mean, obviously she's gorgeous and she loves him and you're like, he's looking for her. And so we're programmed to think that this is the thing.
Right.
But when you actually think about her character, kind of creepy.
Yes. Yes.
Like.
Yes.
And the fact that like, he's like, you know, she's going to run out the door to find him. Where are they going to meet? Where is that? Where is the spot where they.
Well, to be fair.
The exit, you know, to be the fair, exit to the dome. I don't know. Anyways.
To be fair, it's not like. He's going to go unnoticed when he leaves the
dome. I know. And I love it. I'm not. It sounds like I'm actually now critiquing the movie, but I'm not.
Right.
Right. Okay. Are we done with this movie?
Yes.
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 Let me take a little intermission and tell you all a story. Tonight, Andy and I went out with some friends of mine to dinner. and we got in line at the restaurant. And someone else, not me, decided to put my name in instead of them. And he was like, yeah, it's Phil, party of six. And the hostess wrote down Phil, party of six. She wrote down my name spelled F-I-L-L. Phil.
It's true.
That's a thing that happened. Now, just to assuage some of your concerns or thoughts, this was very clearly an American-born human being whose language, first language, was English.
Yes.
I just want to make sure you're clear, because it's not one of those things where I was like, they had to try to make sure they could pronounce it and blah, 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 blah.
Right.
That's fine. Quite honestly, when I go to, like, if I go to a lot of, there's times I'll go to a Mexican restaurant or I'll go to some place where the people that are there, English is definitely their second language. I have no parameters. They could, I mean, it could say George and they could say Phil and I'm like, thank you, that's fine. But like, this person really, really,
especially,
F-I-L-L?
Especially if you're taking George's table.
That's the way to go. George, right. Party of two? That's us. Let's just go. Take the table. So anyways, I had to let the world know about that because F-I-L-L? Really? Is that a thing? Anyways, my movie. I know. By the way, I'd like to do a show of movies that I'd like to watch again in hopes that they're better.
Such as?
I'm a huge fan of the Coen brothers, and there's a few movies that I have tried to... Well, no, I have not seen Burn After Reading more than once. I have not seen Lady Killers more than once.
Okay, I haven't seen Lady Killers at all.
I liked Lady Killers. It was very universally panned. I liked it, but I've never seen it again, and they're my favorite filmmakers. So, you know.
I saw the original with Alec Guinness in anticipation of seeing the Coen brothers version, and never saw the Coen brothers version.
Well, everyone says that one's better, so I think you're okay.
Sure.
I also saw, I have seen Barton Fink several times trying to like Barton Fink more because it was their huge breakout movie. Like it was the movie that was like, okay, people, the Coen brothers are the ones. And now I've watched it several times and I keep thinking, I'm a pretty smart guy. The ending will make sense to me. No, 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 no. And I'm offended because I'm like, you're the Coen brothers. Make sense. I don't get it. I would love for someone to explain it to me. I have no problem not getting it. If someone, I have no problem with the idea that it's not their fault, it's mine, and someone could explain it to me. It took me a couple watches to get into A Serious Man. Okay, but none of those are the ones that I want to say. So the idea of like watching a movie again, hoping to like it more.
Yeah, that's a tough movie. I liked it, but I have only seen it the once.
Sure, I've seen Serious Man a couple times. Anyways, I actually think it gets better because once you realize. Once you realize that it's hopeless, it's easier to deal with, if that makes any sense.
It does. It does make sense.
There's a story. I have a friend named Mitch who says that and I don't think he's the only person who said this, but says that Serious Man is basically the Coen brothers' movie version of Job. And a lot of people don't know this, that the story of Job, you hear about Job, like faithfulness like Job or patience like Job, that Job never did anything wrong, and all these bad things happened to him, but he never stopped believing, and that's what made him okay. I mean, okay, kind of, except, like, the whole time, Job is pretty miserable, and he's complaining, and he's like, well, I know I didn't do anything to deserve this, and yet here I am, and this isn't fair, and my life is terrible.
Right.
And he complains, and all his friends complain, and they're like, you must have done something wrong. Because the whole book is a critique of this idea that if anything bad happens to you, you deserve it, right?
Right.
That's the point. At the end of Job, God shows up. And to be honest, if God shows up in the end of a book, you're like, oh, this is going to get awesome. I don't even care if you believe in God. If you're reading this book and God's a character and he shows up, you're going to get something.
That's the big action set piece at the end of a Michael
Bay
movie.
I mean, it even
says
he shows up in the whirlwind. You're like, oh, this is going to be fantastic, you know? And he literally just goes for like pages and pages. Hey, where were you when I created alligators? Oh, you didn't exist yet, right? Where were you when I set up the foundations of the earth? Oh, you don't know how that was? Because I'm God and you're not. And he basically just goes, his whole answer is, you don't get to know why this happens because you're not God. And Job goes, oh, that's fair. You're right. I'm sorry. My bad. And that's it's kind of not the end. He gets like repaid all of his goodness, but it's sort of like, my point is,
that's the denouement.
Once you realize that the end of Job is God being like, you never get to know, it kind of makes Job easier to read.
Yeah.
Because I imagine the first time someone heard the story of Job, they were like, God said what now? Oh, come on! You know, like, they must have been a little annoyed. So anyways, I felt that way a little bit about Serious Man. Once I realized that it was essentially the same, that you don't get to know and everything is hopeless, it was a little bit easier to deal with. But none of these are the movies I want to tell you about. The movie I want to talk about is not a movie I never didn't like. I always liked it.
Wait. It's not a
never
movie.
I never
didn't. Go. I'll be puzzling through the quadruple quintuple.
I know double negatives are bad, but are quadruple negatives bad?
My head hurts. Just keep talking.
I want to talk about Groundhog Day for a second. Because when Groundhog Day came out, it was fine. I was like, okay, it's funny. I mean, it was funny. It's good. We enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I don't remember it being considered a classic by anybody's standards.
Okay.
But it has grown in the culture's estimation, and it has grown in my estimation, to the degree that when I watched it recently, I was like, and I mean very recently, I was like, this is an absolute classic of modern cinema. This is a movie that we need to show our children. This is a movie that you can use for church groups to show, talk about big issues. This is a movie you could show for political reasons. This is a movie that you could just... Maybe not political reasons. I just said that to sound smart. This is a movie that you could use to show, like, just, it's a movie that is larger than the sum of its parts, and its parts, some of its parts are pretty good. I think when you first see it, you go, oh, all these little things are funny. And it adds up to a charming little movie.
Yeah.
It's much, much deeper than that. And I want to say what I think is really interesting, which is that, well, for me, I think it's really interesting, that this movie gets deeper the more you watch it, which is completely consistent with the theme of Groundhog Day.
That's right.
Like the
movie.
Right.
That's right.
He's a miserable bastard. Do we ever say that on our show? Is that bad?
We do now.
He's a miserable so-and-so who, and his name is Phil, and he's a miserable so-and-so who, through living the same day over and over and over and over again, gets to a point where life becomes completely meaningless. Another Life is Meaningless movie, except he can't die. He realizes that even when life is meaningless, he's still in this life.
Right.
And at some point, he just hits this moment. If this is what eternity is like for me, I might as well learn to enjoy it.
Yeah.
And, but it's through the experiencing of the mundane, the repetitive mundane. And if you ask the majority of people in our generation, of our age, our culture, what is their idea of boredom or hell or monotony? It would be living the same thing over and over and over again.
Yeah, I think that's true.
I'm pretty, it might have been Nietzsche, and I'm not sure, who said that he, something like postulated that you basically lived the exact same life over and over and over and over again. And if you, it was a good life, that's your heaven. And if it was a bad life, that's your hell. Really interesting idea. But
awesome.
We have this idea of escaping the monotony. Escaping, well, I mean, nothing Nietzsche said was like, woohoo, we're all set then. Well, in that case, I you know, shouldn't do a bunch of drugs and get syphilis. You know, I mean, it's like his life was miserable. But the you know, I feel like the idea that we combat repetitiveness, and we combat ritual even, we combat doing something over and over again, and yet, in doing something over and over and over again, that's where we get our rhythm. I mean, how do you, I mean, Andy, but a lot of, you know, like Andy knows, like I played the piano growing up, right? Like you play an instrument, you do something like this. How do you get better? You play over and over and over again. And then all of a sudden you just know how to play something.
Yeah.
And it sucks when you're doing it. This movie gets that. And I know, you know, maybe it's just that I'm getting older. Maybe I grew up with this movie, but I got to tell you, I think it's something really special now. And I didn't, when I saw it as when I was younger, when it came out, I thought it was really good, really funny. And I like funny things. Mm. But now I watch that movie and I'm like, we talk about Bill Murray getting an Academy Award for Rushmore, which he should have done.
Yeah.
Much less nominated America.
Right.
We talk about him getting nominated for Lost in Translation, which I think he didn't for that either, perhaps. Bill Murray not getting...
I think he was
getting,
nominated for, but he didn't.
Okay, so Bill Murray not getting the credit that he deserves just in general.
Right.
But watch his performance in Groundhog Day. It is a perfect performance, and I mean, it's one of those things that slides by us because it's a comedy.
Right.
And the thing that hit me this time around watching it, that just absolutely crushed me, was there's a scene you'll remember where he's dealing with, there's a homeless guy that the very first time he walks by him, he's like, I've got nothing for you. Or he pretends to look for pocket money in his pocket.
Right.
So the thing that makes him, when the first thing he does when he starts to try to turn it around is he wakes up one morning and he was walking by him and he starts to give him some money and ends up just handing him the whole wad of cash. But one of the times you see him, he sees that this guy dies. Like, he watches this guy. One night he runs into the guy in the alley and the guy's dying and he dies. And he takes him to the hospital and the guy died and there's nothing he could do. And the lady's like,
Sometimes people
just die. And he goes, yeah. Not today. And it hit me. At first it was like, oh, that's sad. No, it's not sad. It's absolutely, utterly tragic. Because this time he realizes that every single day this guy dies over and over and over again.
Yeah.
That this guy's last day, literally the day of his death, is happening over and over and over again. And not only that, but on some level, Phil, on some level, Phil Connors realizes that, or feels like part of the reason this guy's dying over and over and over again is because of me.
Right.
Because he's done a bunch of things where he's killed himself over and over and over again just to see if it would end his life, and it didn't work.
Yeah.
And so he's realizing that he bears physically bears responsibility in a real way for someone else. Now, by the way, none of this is ever said.
Yeah.
This isn't some – he doesn't stand up and have this conversation with someone. One day I realized that all – you know, and like – and the worst part is I never learned to read. Like, it's not like that, right? It's like it's just – it takes us watching it over and over and over again to realize that this is tragic for him, and it's utterly transforming. I bear responsibility for other people. And there's a spiritual aspect to this movie, this idea of what can be found in repetitive action of repetitious living, but also we always are striving to escape the mundane, the everyday. And the idea that in actually settling into something, he finds a freedom to enjoy life, it's kind of a counterintuitive story for us. I mean, it really is. We're always reaching for something bigger, and there's this sense of dissatisfaction. And he basically finds satisfaction. And the reason I want to talk, I'm bringing this up today specifically, is because it took me tons of times watching this movie to see that.
Sure.
Because normally it's just, this is funny.
Yeah,
and but that story really crushed me this time around in the best sense of the word, you know. So it's one of those movies that I didn't dislike it. I've always loved it, or I should say, like, I've always liked it. But it's one of those times when a movie has an opportunity to grow for you, and maybe it's just because I grew.
Yeah.
I grew. It's funny. I grew into this movie. You know, T.S. Eliot once said that. That there, most poems are poems that you grow out of. You read a poem at some phase in your life, and then you grow out of it. Ah, that poem doesn't mean to me what it meant to me. I remember the first time I read a Byron poem when I was in high school.
Yeah.
And it was the first time I really was like, poetry is kind of awesome. And I was like, if someone had said to me, like, you know, do you like poetry? I'd be like, I like Byron. And I would like read him, and I thought he was, I thought it was good poetry. And then I read him again as an adult. And it's not that it's bad, it's fine, but I was sort of like, whatever it was that caught me that first time doesn't catch me anymore.
Yeah.
T.S. Eliot said, most poetry you grow out of. He said, Dante's Divine Comedy is a poem you could spend the rest of your life trying to grow into.
Interesting.
Yeah.
All right.
And then if you've ever read the Divine Comedy, you'd see, well, I mean, it's just ridiculously complex and deep. And the more you read it, the more you get into it. And I'm not going to call Groundhog Day the Divine Comedy of movies or anything. But I do think that I'm now starting to search for movies that, or I'm looking at movies again as an adult, especially since we've been doing the show. I watch so much more.
Yeah.
I've been watching so much more stuff, and I'll watch movies that I've seen before.
Yeah.
Again, for the sake of our conversations. And I watch that movie again, and I realize, like, I'm interested in watching movies now and seeing what they mean to me now. Another brief example, it's not the whole movie, but the marriage, all the scenes between Marge and Norm in Fargo, the marriage scenes.
Oh, it's
they were breaks from the action when I first saw the movie.
Right.
I was 16 and I was
right.
like, get back to the wood chipper. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
like get back to
right.
the two bumbling, you know, angry. Those were my guys. Get
right.
back to William H. Because William H. Macy's performance is so, like, hypnotic. I mean, that guy is just like, you're just watching him just going.
But yeah.
Watching a man. But now when I watch it, watching them, I mean, that anchors the film. And yeah. I didn't realize that, and frankly, until I got old enough, and maybe even I got married, and I realized at the very beginning, like, the first time you see them, which, by the way, is 30 minutes into the movie,
mm-hmm.
she gets woken up by a phone call, and then she's like, I gotta get up. And then she's like, stay in bed, it's early yet. And he's like, no, you gotta have some breakfast. I'll make you some eggs. But he does this thing where, first of all, she's on the phone, and you just see this hand fall over like, fall over her. And
right.
That's when you realize she's in bed with her husband. Like, the hand, like, it's just sort of like, bleh.
Right.
And then when he's getting up, getting ready to get make her, he's like, I'll make you some eggs. And she's not, they're not making eye contact. He's facing one side of the bed, she's facing the other. And you just see his back. And she's like, no, you can go to bed. And he's like, nope, gotta make you some eggs. And she just gets this little look on her face. It's not a big deal, but it's just sort of like, and then, but when he says it, he goes, nope, make you some eggs. And, you know, it's like this total mourning disgustingness. And when I was a kid, it's just funny that he made that sound. But now
right.
I'm like, no, that's her man, you know? And, like, he's her woman. And, like, it's just, now I get it. And so I think there's, like, I'm excited to watch some of these movies to see if I've grown into them.
Yeah. My, I have a story about how my being completely lame spared me a lot of your journey with Groundhog Day.
Please.
I didn't see it, I think, until college.
Wow.
Because I was like, no, it's another stupid Bill Murray comedy because I'm an idiot. I was like, right, because I hated Ghostbusters. I was like, why would I want to see a comedy?
You didn't really hate Ghostbusters,
of
right?
Of course not.
I just
of
wanted to make
not.
Sure. That this would be the last podcast.
Right.
We'd be like, and click.
But I was like, you know, it looks stupid and silly and,
yeah.
and
yeah.
you know, I'm, what, 13, 14?
Sure.
So I can't do anything that's
right.
silly.
Right.
And so I just didn't see it. And its reputation was that it was a cute, funny,
right.
slight movie.
Right.
But the first time I saw it, I mean, I certainly wasn't who I am now at the age of 21. That would be the saddest
sure.
thing I've ever said. But I skipped the first few steps. Does that
right.
make sense?
Yeah,
like,
totally. Completely.
Like,
well, yeah.
like the first time I saw it, I was like, that was way funnier than I thought it would be. And maybe there's something else going on.
Yeah, right.
You know?
Right. And it took me a long time of just seeing it over and over again. I want to go on record, if I haven't already. I'm not sure if I've said this in the past on this podcast. I'm going to go ahead and say that I think Bill Murray is one of my two or three favorite working actors.
Nice.
He's gotten to that point where I will see things because he's in them. And I mean, that being said, I didn't see Hyde Park on Hudson.
I was going to say, Hyde Park on Hudson.
But I will see it. I
sure.
will, like, and,
no.
I've heard a lot of mediocre things about it, and I'm totally going to watch it because I want to see Bill Murray play FDR.
Sure.
And Laura Linney, from our previous conversation, she's kind of amazing.
Agreed.
So.
Agreed. No,
so that's what we've got for now.
Yeah.
I think this was, I wouldn't call it a rousing success, maybe a middling success. Would that?
Everything we do is a rousing success.
Okay, you're right. Woo!
That's right. Are you roused? Second Breakfast Nation, are you?
I wonder
what
everyone
thinks.
Let us know what you think about seeing us side by side for realsies. Look, no screen. We
yeah.
should have started with like a like a border between us, like somehow like that covers the whole thing, and then just be like,
right. like, have you seen Strange Brew, where it starts with the MGM lion and then it goes around? There's an actual lion in like a cardboard cutout of it.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. Yes.
It's like, oh jeez.
Oh jeez. So expensive.
Right.
So.
Right.
Anyways.
Please do let us know what you think of us side by side. Although it doesn't really matter because neither of us live in the same place as the other, and we don't live in DC.
I'm trying to get Andy to move to California still. So if this really works out, then.
And when I have a private island in the Caribbean, I'm just going to kidnap Phil and his family.
I'll just be your private chaplain. I'll just be the every private island needs a priest, right?
I mean,
just because you're Jewish doesn't mean you don't need an Episcopal priest. I mean, come on.
Yeah, as always, Phil, your logic is completely unassailable.
It would not be logical to have a private island without a priest.
Do you see what I'm dealing with this time in person, folks? Yes, well, this has been a lot of fun. We're going to go hang out a little more because we can, because we're in the same place. And we will see you all again real soon.
Wait, can you do one thing before you say goodbye?
Please do.
Can you
please,
just move like this? Bobby Gottfried! All right, sorry. There's a guy back there the whole time. Blew your mind again, Second Breakfast.
So you've got photo bombing, you've got video bombing, now you have podcast bombing.
What is it, Marble Hornets, or what's it called?
Yes, yeah, Marble Hornets. It's a horror YouTube
don't
series.
Don't worry about it.
Don't worry. If you don't already know what it is, it's too scary for you. So yes. Anything else?
Peace. All right. Have a good day.
We are Second Breakfast. I'm Andy Ruff. literally alongside Phil Duvall. And thanks for watching. We'll see you again real soon. Bye bye.
Bye.
The most important meal of the day, second breakfast.